Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah.
He was a guest on my TV show 16 long years ago. And just last year, he was a featured speaker at our spa adventure at Miraval. Thanks to the courage and forward thinking of Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, the term mindfulness has now entered our lexicon and is slowly but surely becoming a convention in our society. I'm mindful and grateful for his contribution to the culture, helping us to come to our senses is what he does, healing ourselves and the world through mindfulness. And now he's here to share with us the soulfulness of mindfulness.
It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series. Indeed is what it is, Oprah's Soul Series, and I'm Oprah. It's a destination location for those who, like myself, those of you who are on a lifelong quest for a greater sense of understanding about the world, asking the question, primary question of why are we here on Earth at this very moment, and how can we all begin to maximize the great opportunity of life as a human being that we've been given? Well, there's a reason, and we all have a purpose. This I know for sure. And the more knowledge we can gain about that, which is greater than ourselves, I think the closer we come to being able to fulfill our purpose. So when you hear someone described as soulful or you meet a soulful person, many times you are immediately aware of the rich depth that they possess, a sort of palpable air of spirituality. But what do you think of when you hear someone described as mindful? Someone is mindful. Well, joining me today is truly one of the most mindful people I have ever had the great honor to know or meet. And it's based on his rich sense of mindfulness that you know him to be a truly soulful person. Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn is a scientist. He's a writer, and he is a meditation teacher. He's also a professor of medicine emeritus at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, where he was founding executive director of the Center for Mindfulness in Medicine, Healthcare, and Society, and also founder and former director of the world-renowned Stress Reduction Clinic. Among many other titles, he's the author of one of my favorite books, By My Bedside All the Time, Coming to Our Senses, Healing Ourselves and the World Through Mindfulness. And just recently, this year, I think, was this little book, which is a version of Coming to Our Senses. And this one's on my desk all the time. It's called Arriving at Your Own Door, 108 Lessons in Mindfulness. And I have that on my desk just when somebody is getting on my nerves. I can pop open a lesson and read it in less than 30 seconds. Hi, Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn.
Hi there, Oprah. Nice to be on your show.
Nice to... Just hearing your voice is calming.
Well, ditto. Well, I mean, you framed this whole thing so beautifully. I mean, it's really touching what you're doing on the airwaves.
Well, listen, I would like to know. I mean, I've had the pleasure of being in your company on several occasions, and every single time I'm around you, the first time I think almost 15 years ago on the Oprah Show, and most recently was last year when we were at Miraval together,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is always such a calming. I always feel like, the tide has come in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you always this way?
That. No, just ask my kids or my wife. No, I mean, I think that it's a matter of balance, and it's not an act. It's not like I'm putting anything on. But when you cultivate mindfulness, one of the first things it does is it cultivates a certain amount of stability and groundedness in your heart and in your mind. And so, you know, other people can feel that. And since we all tend to be on the frazzled side, given everything that all the pressures we're under, there's a natural sort of tendency to feel better in a space where somebody is actually holding the space in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's anything that's a personal attribute of my own, but more arising out of the practice or the cultivation of mindfulness, which really means being in the present moment, non-judgmentally and with an open heart.
Wow. Well, that sort of simplifies it, but you wrote a book that's over 500 pages.
Over 600 pages.
Over 600 pages talking about this principle of mindfulness. And actually, when I was preparing to do the show, I was talking to a member of my staff about you, and they were saying, well, so what's the difference between mindfulness and meditation? Because often when it's spoken of, people think that it means walking around in this meditative state all the time.
Well, first of all, let me say that it's a great question, and there are a lot of misunderstandings about what meditation is. So a lot of people feel like it's just making your mind blank and then you're sort of zoning along in some bliss state. And that's not really an appropriate understanding of meditation. Mindfulness is a subset of meditation practices. So my working definition of meditation is that it's the intentional self-regulation of attention. So it's, it's just what we are doing from moment to moment with our attention. And mindfulness is the cultivation of an awareness via paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. And it's the non-judgmental part that's really the kicker, but just being in the present moment, it turns out, isn't so easy either. And yet that's the only space that we're ever alive in. And so if we were to reclaim the present moment, it would have profound effects on our lives, on our health, on our view of ourselves in the world. And that's why it's the basic center core of all the work that I've been doing for the past 30 years.
And all through Coming to Our Senses, the many chapters you talk about, for example, not resisting and also not having attachment to things.
Yeah. This is a profound teaching, actually.
Yes, yes. I mean,
easy to say, not so easy to do.
Yes.
But it's liberating. It's actually tremendously freeing when you see how often we take things personally that happen to us that just aren't personal. But we often react by feeling, well, I didn't sign up for this. This isn't why I'm alive. And, of course, then you do take it personally and you compound the stress and the pain enormously.
By believing that things are personal.
Exactly. And that then you react to it in a way where we're always fighting with what we don't like or trying to pursue more what we hope would make us feel more joyful and wonderful. And in a sense, ironic as it sounds, we wind up getting in our own way and lose touch with what's deepest and best in ourselves.
So, all right, we're going to try to simplify in the next half hour.
Absolutely.
What you've said in over 600 pages. And also, arriving at your own door, that little book, that little green book, what a precious gem that is.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
What a precious gem that is, and perfect gift for people, too. Perfect gift for any occasion.
And that title comes from a line in a Derek Walcott poem, which is really an amazing poem.
It is my favorite poem of all time.
Really?
That poem is framed and calligraphied in green calligraphy on my wall in my bathroom. It's the first thing I see in the morning when I wake up.
And so for your listeners, the poem starts out by saying, the time will come.
The time will come.
But, When
you
will
meet yourself arriving at your own front door.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But when will that be? If you're not careful, decades could go by and you'll miss it, that time. So it's not, he's making a very positive assertion that time will come, but we have to participate in being ready and willing to do that. Or we could, as Thoreau said many, many years ago, miss everything beautiful in our own lives because we were too busy hunting up something else, conjuring up something else, and losing touch.
Well, I'm joined today by a meditation teacher and a man whose name has really become synonymous with mindfulness in the West, Jon Kabat-Zinn, Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who has written this wonderful book. How would you describe Coming to Our Senses? I mean, when I use the word Bible, it's sort of a Bible of spirituality for me. But people get all, you know, upset when you use the term Bible.
Yeah, and even spirituality sometimes, if you're not clear about what that means. What it is for me is a kind of a synthesis of 30 years of deep inquiry on my part and work with an amazing range of thousands and thousands of people with various medical conditions, stress, pain, and illness, and also Olympic athletes and, for that matter, you know, the Chicago Bulls and the right. Los Angeles Lakers, a whole range of different kinds of people in this society who we have taught, because they've really opened up to it, to cultivate mindfulness in their own lives. And then
multidimensional flowering of living,
living in the present moment, yes. And being less judgmental about your experience,
and not resisting whatever is going on.
Exactly, not getting caught in liking and disliking. That doesn't mean you can't prefer some things to others, but when you get caught and you self-identify with a particular kind of narrow view of yourself, then your beauty in a certain way collapses, and also your health. And, you know, if you talk to people who, you know, have been through these kinds of programs, they'll say that, you know, this gave them back their life, and they're not kidding.
Well, in the book, you all also talk about all different kinds of meditation, which we will be talking about later on. But, you know, for everybody who's in their car or wherever you are listening to us right now, for each of you who's in your car, because I'm only speaking to one at a time here. For each of you who's listening to us, I know it's difficult to understand when you're going through really tough stuff in your life, how to be mindful, because you want to be out of that moment. You want to be out of that situation. You don't want to be going through a crisis. So how do you do that? How do you allow yourself to be still when your whole life is a mess?
Well, metaphorically, you do it by putting out the welcome mat for everything and realizing this is my life.
Now, that's hard.
Yes, it is. So there are like little bite-sized ways to do it. And the best way, of course, is not to do it when you're in an absolute life crisis. The best way to do it is when you feel like you're more or less okay at this particular moment, or that the crises are kind of chronic and never-ending. And one way to do it is to actually befriend your breathing.
Yes.
See, because nothing else has to happen, but your life is unfolding because your body is taking care of this unbelievably powerful function that we take totally for granted unless we, you know, have... Befriend your breathing. And just ride, surf on the waves of your own breathing, and it has a natural calming effect that centers you back in the present moment, because none of us care about the last breath. It's always this breath that's the important one for us.
Right.
So that brings us into the present moment in a way that then can give us a sense of, hey, even in the face of what Zorba the Greek called the full catastrophe of life,
yes,
I can actually be in an okay relationship to this full catastrophe and learn how to shift in certain ways in relationship to it emotionally, cognitively, in terms of my body, so that I can actually ride on the waves of what's going on with me and maybe have a different perspective on it.
So when your boss, your spouse, your friend, you're in some situation where you can feel your temperature rising, your blood pressure, you can feel yourself getting pulled into whatever appears to be a difficult situation, start riding your breath?
Yes. And we differentiate between that kind of emotional reaction, for instance, where things tend to collapse and contract emotionally, and even in your body you can feel it, and a response, a mindful response, which means that you no longer have to, you know, get into knee-jerk reactions every time something happens that you don't particularly want to be happening. That makes for a much more spacious way of, again, metaphorically, dancing with the actuality of what is. And it turns out that that's an art form. And when you cultivate it, dancing with the actuality of things instead of always wanting it to be exactly the way you need it to be in order to be happy.
Wow.
That way doesn't leave much room for happiness. If you are more open and spacious to this kind of orienting to the present moment, you may discover that you're already happier than you.
I know, but we're human beings. We don't like discomfort. We don't like pain.
Right.
We don't like anxiety. We don't like frustration.
When people bring
that
up, you know what I say?
Okay.
I say, lots of luck. If you're a human being, you don't like pain, lots of luck, because you're going to run into it sooner or later. And you can also spend your life, as we well know, trying every conceivable way to run away from it or anesthetize yourself from pain. But the core of these meditative practices is about actually letting pain, and even more, the suffering that doesn't have to come with pain, transform your life into a kind of work of, you know, sort of wise living and compassion, both for yourself and other people. Derek Walcott's poem is unbelievably compassionate. It's saying that you can actually feast on your life, not when it gets a lot better, right now in the only moment you ever have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's an incredibly affirmative thing, a statement about people. It's saying, look, we sometimes sell ourselves way too short. We are not just our problems. We are not just our diseases. We are not just, you know, the aches and pains in our body. We are infinitely larger than this. But we've never really been taught or exposed to a way of holding ourselves as if we were actually full human beings with a lot of different dimensions, many of which we either don't see or take for granted.
Wow.
And that's what this work does, is it's saying, look, one hidden dimension that's right under our noses, all pun intended, is the present moment.
Yes.
It's like we're always in the future scheming and planning and worrying about what will happen or hasn't happened.
And that's why we need to come to our senses and see that.
And the point about coming to our senses is that it's both metaphorical in the sense of waking up, but it's also literal in the sense that if you think about it for a moment, the senses are the only way any of us have of knowing either the outer world or the inner world. If we didn't have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and the Buddhists would throw in mind or awareness, how would we be in relationship to anything, inwardly or outwardly? So we have these amazing senses, and there are far more than five or six, and we don't actually cultivate intimacy with them. That's what I mean when I say befriend them. Start seeing, you know, instead of just looking, you'll be able to see all sorts of things that are right in front of your eyes.
Like what?
Same with hearing.
Like what?
Well, for instance, the transient expressions of sadness on people's faces, like that you might not notice because you're too busy or you don't really want to see how sad somebody
That's
is.
That's right.
Even
when
if
you
they
say,
work
how
with
are you? And before they can answer,
exactly.
You're already
I'm
gone.
Fine.
Cause you
right,
hope you,
exactly.
And are praying they don't say anything other than fine.
Exactly.
Yes.
Or say if you're a parent of a newborn baby and, you know, but you're too hassled, even there, you might miss these incredible expressions of amazement, beauty, elation, every conceivable human emotion in the face of a, like, 2-month-old.
Well, tell us how to begin to do that, how to begin to be more mindful.
So, you know, maybe rather than telling you, maybe I should just guide a little bit of it, as long as we say something about, you know, people who are driving their cars, not to close your eyes or go off into cosmic consciousness.
Yes.
Do not
practice
close
this
your
at home
eyes
if you're driving.
But, you know, you can do this driving. In fact, driving requires mindfulness. Otherwise, you know, there would be nothing but accidents. So most of the time we are mindful.
But everybody's been in that situation where you end up home and don't know how you got there.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that
yes.
is, you know, potentially a very life-threatening situation. So the way to do it would be, let's just take a moment and drop into the feeling of the breath moving in and out of the body. And you don't need to close your eyes for this. This has been going on since we were born, but we tend not to tune it in. We tune it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can feel your breath in your body. You can feel it at the nostrils. You could feel it in your belly. You could feel it in your chest, wherever the sensations of breathing are most predominant. And let's just kind of agree to put our attention someplace in the body that we can feel the breath moving and just feel it on the in-breath for the full duration, and on the out-breath for the full duration. And you can do this actually silently. I know the radio doesn't love silence, but actually it's incredibly profound to just drop into this moment in an inward silence, and we'll make an outward silence just for a few moments.
Yes, because the radio doesn't love silence.
Yeah, and also so that people can just sort of experience that we're talking about something that they already have. This is not like they have to figure something out. They're already breathing. They already have the apparatus to be aware of the breathing. When they bring these two together, you can taste in 1 second that there's a calming effect,
yes.
There's a centering effect,
yes.
And there's a clarifying effect.
Yes.
Now, the difficult
thing
is...
That takes you out of whatever else was going on the outside.
Without shutting it out. It's not like we're pushing things away or denying that things are happening. In fact, we're learning how to be, in some sense... I don't know, artists or samurais of the present moment, of living life fully, no matter what we're facing. And yes, it's much easier if you start in those moments, as we said, where there's not that much of a crisis. But sometimes your motivation is most high when you can't stand it anymore.
Right.
And, you know...
I do it a lot when I have people whose energy is conflicting with my own. Mm-hmm, I'm talking to Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, author of Coming to Our Senses, who was just leading us through a mindfulness exercise. But sometimes, you know, some people will come in and their energy is just, you know,
So you need to breathe out their energy.
I have to breathe out their energy, and I have to,
become transparent.
Yes, and also, I also have this bad, I don't know if it's a bad habit or not, but I can take on the energy of other people.
Yeah,
really easily.
And especially empathic women.
Yeah, I can do it. I remember years ago, I said to one of my executive producer at the time, I was feeling so much of the energy of my guests. I said, oh, God, I'm feeling everything they're feeling. And she says, well, you need to stop doing that.
Right, because it's very important for you to stay in your own energy,
stay in your own
space.
Energy. Yes.
And, because, you know, of course, not all energies are that healthy. So very often it's really important in any kind of relationship to bring awareness and mindfulness to these kinds of energy situation so that you don't get either, you know, seduced or captured by somebody else's really powerful energies.
But for those of you who are listening to us here, the question I would want to know, if I'm a mom, is how I can be more fully present with my children. Because I think that, I often say this on our show, that to be a mom and to be a good parent, mother or father, at home with your children all day and having that as your main source of, you know, stimulation. And to do that well, day in, day out, create meals, activities, have the kind of stimulus for your children that allows them to, you know, be not only active, but, you know, inspired every day. That is the hardest thing in the world to
do. You're absolutely right. That's the hardest work in the world. It's also the most profound spiritual practice, I
would say. That's what I think. That's what I think.
The most profound. And it means that while you are nurturing this young being and bringing them into the world in a way that will allow them to optimize what's beautiful and strongest about themselves and learn how to deal with all of the difficult stuff, that they are actually shaping your heart and your mind as well, if you're open to it. And I, you know, my wife and I wrote a book 10 years ago called Everyday Blessings, The Inner Work of Mindful Parenting. And in there, we described that like having children in the house is a little bit like having live-in Zen masters. And they're going to push every single one of our buttons, and we're going to either react or respond. And if we respond, then the quality of love and mutual nurturance is unbelievably powerful and is the foundation in some sense of truly empathic, emotionally intelligent, clear-sighted and fully embodied human beings. And I'm not talking just about the kids. They're already that way, and we mess it up.
But
I'm talking about the parents.
How do you do that? How do you remain mindful, fully present with so many things going on and multitasking? And
You don't do a very good job at it, and it doesn't have... Mindfulness is so powerful. You don't have to be mindful all the time. And I must say, when you do start to cultivate mindfulness, the first thing you see is how mindless we are most of the time. So we're aware of how much of the time we get caught by this or that, our own emotional reactions and so forth. And you know what? That's okay. It's a very forgiving and compassionate practice. I mean, it's really the foundation of it. When we hear the word mindfulness, you also have to hear the word heartfulness, or you just don't even understand it. Because in all Asian languages, the word for mind and the word for heart are the same word. And this is coming out of the meditative practices of basically the Eastern traditions.
Is this Buddhism? Is this Buddhism?
It's mindfulness is very often spoken of as the heart of Buddhist meditation. But the interesting thing about it...
Does this mean you're Buddhist?
No, and I'm not Buddhist. And also, by the way, the Buddha wasn't a Buddhist. The ism part and the... I'm serious. And the Buddhism and
like Jesus Christ wasn't a Christian.
True enough.
Yes.
And so certain something builds up around it. And then very, you know, sadly, sometimes it kind of collapses the depth of
Buddha wasn't even
what was
a Buddhist.
Going on.
Yes.
And basically, it's about being human.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about understanding the nature of one's own mind. And we hardly ever get any exposure to understanding inwardly the nature of our own mind. And if
How
we did
you discover it? Dr.
Well, I was actually a graduate student at MIT in molecular biology back in the day. And Houston Smith, who was a professor of philosophy and religion there, had invited a Zen master to come and give a talk about a book he'd just published in 1967 called The Three Pillars of Zen. And when I went to that talk, four people of all of MIT went to that talk, and it blew the top off my head. And it made me realize, this is what I've been looking for my entire 22 young years of life. And it changed my life just to hear that it was possible to befriend not just one's breath, but the body and the mind, one's own body and mind, in such a way to, it's almost like getting in touch with the user manual for the human organism. It's like, you know, oh, this is how we can really deepen our relationship with the apparatus that we've been given. And God, I mean, it's like, you know, a very famous biologist once said that he would rather be at the controls of a 747 trying to land it in a snowstorm without any training as a pilot than to be at the control of his own liver for 30 seconds.
Wow.
So we take a lot of things about our own magnificence for granted. And for instance, when patients come in to see us in the stress reduction program, I actually, you know, try to remember as best I can that I am in the
presence.
When
you first founded the stress reduction program at the University of Massachusetts almost 30 years ago,
that's right.
Was mindfulness even a part of our lexicon at the time?
No, this is something that
they thought
really,
you were. Ooh.
Well, they didn't because, you know, in part because I went to MIT and got my PhD with a Nobel laureate.
Well,
I mean, they gave me a lot of space. They're thinking, you know, he must know what he's doing. Of course, I didn't know what I was doing, but that's where the creativity comes from, that edge between knowing and not knowing.
Well, love talking to you. Can you believe a half an hour is up?
No.
Well, it's gone.
That's the way it is with moments.
That's the way it is with moments.
Time actually stops still.
Well, let's have 30 more next week, okay?
Beautiful.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for joining us on Oprah and Friends with Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, author of Coming to Our Senses. I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul Series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.